The sermon this morning is continuing in the series on the Sermon on the Mount. And we are going to continue as well to tie back to the Beatitudes prior to hearing the specific verses that Andy will preach on this morning. And as Zach has just prayed, let us hear a word from the Lord. Hear now the word of the Lord. So Matthew 5, we'll do verse 7 and then chapter 7, the first six verses. Blessed are the merciful, for they will be shown mercy. Judge not, that you be not judged. For with the judgment you pronounce, you will be judged, and with the measure you use, it will be measured to you. Why do you see the speck that is in your brother's eye, but do not notice the log that is in your own eye? Or how can you say to your brother, let me take the speck out of your eye, when there is the log in your own eye? You hypocrite, first take the log out of your own eye, and then you will see clearly to take the speck out of your brother's eye. Do not give dogs what is holy, and do not throw your pearls before pigs, lest they trample them underfoot and turn to attack you.
Morning, everyone. One day, a man went for a hike. He'd heard all about a beautiful alpine lake that his friends had hiked to a few weeks ago. And it was a beautiful day, the sun was shining, and so he decided to grab a couple of water bottles, drive out to where he'd heard this hike was, and check it out. And so he got to the trailhead, and he started walking. But after about a mile or so, his feet began to hurt because the trail was rockier than he had expected, and he'd worn shoes that were too thin. A couple more miles went by, and slowly but surely the trees began to thin, and the shade that he'd been walking through began to disappear. The sun, which at lower elevations in the shade had been comfortable and warm, began to beat on his back and sap his strength. And so as he began to drink more and more water, he began to run low on water. After about another mile or so, he saw a stranger coming in the opposite direction down the trail towards him, and hoping that the lake would just be around the corner, he asked the person, how much farther? And he was dismayed to hear, you're not even halfway there, man. And so with hurting feet and running dangerously low on water, frustrated that he hadn't gotten there, he decided to turn around and go home. What did the man do wrong? Obviously, we could say, you know, he wore the wrong shoes, he didn't bring enough water, he didn't go early enough in the day to avoid the heat. But why did he make all those bad decisions? He made them because he didn't see clearly what was ahead of him. He'd heard from his friends, hey, there's this great lake. And so without consulting a guidebook or anything like that, he decided to go after it. Because he didn't see clearly what was ahead of him, because he didn't see clearly what the weather was going to be like, what the mileage was going to be like, what the terrain was going to be like, because he didn't see any of that clearly, he ran into trouble, and he had to go home early. Few things are more important than being able to see clearly. Not just in terms of picking and preparing for a hike, but truly in all of life, and in particular in the context of our relationships with others. Relationships, on the one hand, can be one of the best things in life. They can be one of the most enjoyable, life-giving aspects of life, or if they go wrong, they can be one of the most destructive aspects of life. Depending on how they work out, they can either bring happiness and satisfaction, deep meaning to our lives, or if they go wrong, they can bring anxiety, and loneliness, and despair. But God doesn't actually promise us anywhere a happy life or an easy life. And in fact, Jesus talked every now and then about how our lives would actually be filled with trouble. And part of that trouble, no doubt, comes from the relationships that we surround ourselves with. But what God does do instead is he gives us a guide to navigate relationships well, whether they're easy and joyful or hard and difficult. What he does is he gives us a guide for navigating the broken, messy beauty of relationships, a guide to help us see clearly ourselves, to help us see clearly those around us, and to see clearly the God who made us so that we can live well amid the glory and the mess of human relationship. And throughout the Sermon on the Mount thus far, Jesus has been teaching us to see clearly. He's been giving us pieces of the guide one by one. He's been teaching us to see clearly who is truly blessed and who is not truly blessed. To see that it's the poor in spirit who are blessed. It's the merciful who are blessed. Likewise, he's been helping us to see clearly what it means to live a moral life. That it isn't just following the rules, but that it's living out of a heart that's been renewed by God to act out of the character of God. And this morning, he's going to apply, in our passage today, he's going to apply all of that, all that we've been learning from the Sermon on the Mount, to relationships, like a guidebook, so that we can see them clearly, so that we can see ourselves clearly, and so we can see those around us clearly. And he does so by giving us two pieces of advice. Don't judge, but also don't be naive. Don't judge others, but don't be naive. How do we navigate relationships well amid the midst of mess and difficulty? Don't judge, don't be naive. How do we, as Jesus said earlier, seek first God's kingdom and righteousness now in the context of relationships? Don't judge. Don't be naive. Or to turn those around and put them positively, learn to see clearly. Learn to see yourself clearly. Learn to see the people around you clearly. Learn to see God clearly so that you don't judge and don't become naive. Now, Jesus spends the vast majority of this passage on not judging others, so that's where we're going to start. How do you see others clearly? First off, don't judge. And this verse where Jesus says, "Do not judge, lest you be judged," has become probably the most quoted verse in the Bible. It's probably eclipsed John 3:16 as the most quoted verse in the Bible, but unfortunately, it's also probably become the most misapplied verse in the Bible. Very often when you hear people quote this verse, what they're saying essentially is, do not object to a person's choice or lifestyle. Do not object to a way that somebody else lives. Or at least don't object to anything about another person that I personally do not object to. And the problem with that, of course, is that it's completely circular. Because what they just told you to do, they actually just did themselves. And so you go on this downward spiral of everybody non-judgmentally judging each other. And the reason why we make that mistake over and over again is because we've misinterpreted the word judge. Depending on the context, judge can mean different things. Right, so there's one context where it can refer to a legal judgment, right? Judging between a plaintiff and a defendant. There are other contexts where it can refer to judging between or distinguishing between two different things, like judging a science fair contest. And other times, it can refer to something else. It can refer to looking down on another person. It can refer to taking an attitude of criticism or condemnation. Condescension, writing somebody off, looking down your nose at them. And if you look at the context of this passage, it's clear that Jesus is talking about the last option. Right, there's no indication here that he's telling us we got to do away with the legal system. There's no, and throughout the Sermon on the Mount up to this point, he's been teaching us to distinguish between different things, distinguish between those, what it means to really be blessed and what it doesn't, distinguish between true righteousness and false righteousness, distinguish between true spirituality and hypocritical spirituality. And as we go through this passage, you can almost hear the condescending voice come out of Mr. Log and I. Dear silly brother, I see you've gotten a speck in your eye again. Let me take care of that for you. Jesus is talking about the last option for what it means to judge. Do not look down on others. Don't be condescending towards them. Don't be condemning. The way that you can spot that is that phrase, turn up your nose towards other people. When we do so, even if it's just unconsciously, we start to literally look down our noses at people. You can catch yourself doing it if you're aware. But Jesus is talking here not just about a one-time thing, something that we do every now and then when we come around the right or the wrong kind of people. He's talking about an attitude that we have towards other people. In this sentence, Jesus uses what's called a present prohibition, which means a command that is ongoing. It is never ending. It is for now, and it is for all of life. He isn't just saying, make sure to watch your words so that you don't let anything out that you shouldn't. He's saying to watch your heart and your mind as well. How you feel about other people. What you think about other people. Jesus is saying that he wants us, yes, indeed, to see the clear difference between right and wrong, but that difference goes to our attitudes towards other people as well. Don't judge. Don't look down. Don't be criticizing or condemning. And he teaches us, he gives us a way of picturing this. He says that with the measure you use towards others, it'll be measured to you. So think of a yardstick. Right? We all have this sort of internal yardstick by which we measure ourselves and other people. And the yardstick allows us to see whether or not they measure up. We all have expectations of one another for how we should act, for what people should value, for the choices that people make. Whether those expectations are spoken or unspoken, whether we even realize that we have them or not. That's what Jesus is referring to when he talks about the measure that you use. So I have a question for you. Is Jesus saying that we should therefore, because we should not judge, we should therefore abandon all yardsticks? Is he saying we should cast away and banish all yardsticks? I don't think that's quite what he's saying. On the one hand, there is, throughout the passage, this sense that he's saying that the way that you look at other people, God is one day going to come before you and essentially play back the story of your life and ask you if you were as merciful with other people as you would like them to be with you, as forgiving towards other people as you would like them to be forgiving towards you. But I don't think that he's banishing yardsticks, though. I think what he's saying is that we have the wrong one. And I think it's because all throughout the Sermon on the Mount, Jesus has been setting remarkably high expectations for us. He hasn't been saying, no, it's all relative. Just do away with your yardsticks and there will be peace. He's actually come to us and said this. Don't just avoid murder, but also avoid calling another person a fool, hating them in your heart, and in fact, you should be so bent towards peace with other people that you will actively pursue reconciliation with them, even if you're in the wrong. He's setting a remarkably high yardstick for us. Look at what he says about adultery. Don't just not commit adultery. Don't even look at another person with lust. Don't even objectify another person in your heart. And if you do, tear that away and throw it out. Jesus hasn't been telling us to do away with the yardsticks this entire time. Up until now, he's actually been giving us a remarkably different, difficult yardstick to live up to. But here's the thing about yardsticks. They're very hard to read with a log jammed in your eye. If I have a log jammed in my eye and I look at a yardstick, what are the odds that I'm going to be able to tell the difference between centimeters and inches? Right, if I have a log jammed in my eye, and when you hear log, I don't want you to think like a decent-sized piece of driftwood. I want you to think of one of these main rafters here. If I have one of those jammed in my eye, and you hold two yardsticks in front of me, and one of them is accurate and one of them is inaccurate, I'm not going to be able to tell the difference because I have a log jammed in my eye. I wouldn't even be able to tell the difference between a speck of sawdust and the pupil in your eye or a freckle on your face. I wouldn't be able to tell the difference between something that should be there and something that shouldn't be there, because I'm even blinder, more blind than you are at that point. And the log that gets jammed in our eyes is the yardstick of self. If I measure other people only in terms of my wants, my values, my experiences, my culture, I'll never be able to see them clearly. I'll never even be able to see myself clearly. I'll never be able to tell the difference between a speck of sawdust which shouldn't be in their eye and a freckle on their face, which is just fine. For example, depending on the culture that you grew up in, depending on the family that you grew up in, your personal preferences, you may think that it is stone cold immoral to even own a gun. And depending on the culture that you grew up in, the family that you were raised in, and your personal preferences, you may think that it is stone cold immoral to put any regulations on guns. Likewise, depending on the family and the part of the country where you grew up in, it might be incomprehensible to you that your children do anything other than go to college when they get out of high school. Or, depending on where you're from, it might be completely incomprehensible to you that your kids would do anything other than get a job or go into the military after high school, if they graduate high school. And hear me well, what I'm not saying is that there is no yardstick to determine those things. What I'm not saying is that it's all relative, and it's all just a matter of where you come from. What I'm saying is that in order to determine between things, we need a better yardstick. We need a true yardstick. We need an accurate yardstick. And we need to be able to see that yardstick clearly. We have to have an objective standard outside of ourselves, outside of our wants, our preferences, our culture, our desires. That's not based on us. We don't need to ban yardsticks. We need them desperately. We need to be able to read them clearly. We need a better yardstick. We cannot judge by our own log jammed in the eye standards. On the other hand, though, we also can't be naive about people or about the world around us. So if part of seeing clearly is not looking down on others based on our own faulty sight, our own self-centered preferences, then the other half of seeing clearly is about not being naive about other people or about the world, which we see in verse 6, the last verse of our passage this morning. And verse 6, for good reason, is kind of a controversial one. It reads basically like this: don't give to dogs what is sacred. Don't cast your pearls before pigs, because if you do, they may turn around and gore you, or turn around and, trample you under feet, or tear you to pieces. And the two questions that automatically come to mind is, who is Jesus talking about when he's saying pigs and dogs? And what is he talking about when he's talking about pearls and what is holy? So a lot of people look at this verse and automatically assume that Jesus is being sarcastic. After all, we shouldn't look down on people as pigs and dogs. And we shouldn't take a condescending attitude of giving our pearls of wisdom away to other people who clearly need our wisdom. And that's both true. That's both valid. We shouldn't look down on other people. We shouldn't have a condescending attitude towards them. But I think that what Jesus is getting at is different from those things. They're both valid, but I think that's not what he's getting at here. In his world, dogs weren't simply beloved family pets. Pigs weren't the darlings of 4-H clubs. In the ancient world back then, dogs, okay, don't picture like a herd of golden retriever puppies rampaging through the city just looking for hugs. Think of a pack of wild hyenas. Think of a pack of wild African dogs coming and rampaging through town at dawn and dusk. Think of what would happen if you got near that pack. Likewise, pigs were not Wilbur from Charlotte's Web. They were much closer to wild boars. Animals that were much more likely to gore you than snuggle up close to you. Add to that the fact that both pigs and dogs were ritually unclean by Jewish standards, and you have Jesus painting a picture here of people who are aggressively and violently antagonistic to the things of God. People who, when you share what is holy with them, which the commentators all seem to agree is most likely the gospel, so when you share your faith with them, rather than simply politely saying thanks but no thanks, or that's nice for you but it's not really my thing, instead of that, they turn around and they look for a way to destroy you because of your faith. They look for a way to get you fired or at least demoted. They look for a way to tear down your reputation with others. And if you know anything about the history of the Christian movement, you know that Jesus wasn't being alarmist here. He wasn't saying, on the one hand, be suspicious of everyone you meet who isn't a believer. But on the other hand, if you look at history, you see this happening in every century in which the church has existed, on every continent to which it has spread. And so on the one hand, we have to be discerning. We have to be wise and clear-sighted about the people around us. We live in a violent world filled with vindictive people. And some of them, here and there, will make their way into our lives. But on the other hand, we need to be clear-sighted enough to not lump people into this group who don't belong there. Jesus is not giving us a blanket option to throw everybody in here who we disagree with or who we don't like. He's being very specific. There are some people in the world who will aggressively oppose the gospel and the things of God, and we need to be discerning and wise around them. We need to be clear-sighted. And we need to be clear-sighted enough to not put people in that camp who don't belong there. On the hopefully rare occasion when we come across someone like this, we have to be wise and discerning about them, but we can't look down our noses at them. Because Jesus' command not to judge, not to look down our noses at others, not to be condemning or harsh, applies to them too. He hasn't put that command on hold and said, there is another standard for the way that you treat these people. Don't judge, but also don't be naive. Don't hold people to your own unrealistic standards. Don't look down on them, but don't be naive. And so together, not judging and not being naive are kind of like two lenses in a pair of glasses. They help us together to see clearly ourselves and the world around us. And if you have glasses, you know that as your eyes begin to fall apart, they do so at different levels. They do so at different speeds. Right, so your right eye may be a little bit stronger than your left, and so you need a slightly different lens in each eye. And in the same way, some of us default more towards judgment. Others of us default a little bit more towards naivete. Some of us need to have a stronger lens in one eye and the other, but we both need to have a lens over both eyes. Some of us need to watch our interior life so that we can find ourselves judging others and turn away from that. Others of us need to watch our interior lives so that we find ourselves being naive and turn away from that as well. Whichever of the two lenses that we need strengthened, ironically, the prescription is actually the same. In order to have our eyes corrected, in order to see ourselves and the world around us clearly, it starts by seeing Jesus clearly. I mentioned earlier that we need a new and better yardstick to measure with. And Jesus is that yardstick. He is that new and better yardstick. In Romans 5, the Apostle Paul talked about how Jesus is, he's like a new Adam. And if you remember the Old Testament, of course, Adam is the father of all of humanity. And for better or for worse, and mostly for worse, we all end up like Adam. We all end up turning away from God as he did. We all end up in a world filled with estrangement from God and one another and even ourselves. We all end up growing up to his measure. But Jesus is a new Adam. He is, in other words, the founder of a new humanity, or a new and better way of living, a new and better way of human. He is the new yardstick. Every single one of us has spent our lives living up to the broken and bent yardstick of Adam through things like judgment or naivete. But Jesus is the new and better yardstick with a new and better way of being human. And here's the thing. His new and better way, his measure, is mercy and forgiveness and redemption. Trading in the yardstick of judgment and naivete for the yardstick of mercy and forgiveness and redemption. Picture it like this. Okay, so picture yourself in a courtroom. You're on trial for your life, and you are as guilty as sin. You stand accused of judging others, of looking down on others, of judging them by the wrong standards, and not even bothering to apply those standards to yourself. And you're declared guilty. Because you are. Because I am. Because each of us is. But as soon as the judge finishes reading the sentence, he stands up, he takes off his robe, he walks down off of the bench, and he orders the bailiff to put himself in the handcuffs. And he goes and serves the sentence for you. The sentence that he had just placed you under, he goes and serves for you. Jesus is the new yardstick, and his yardstick looks like mercy and forgiveness and redemption. He is the judge who comes down to take our place. And he is far more merciful and gracious than we often give him credit for. According to the standards of his kingdom, his way of ordering society, his way of ordering human relationships. Mercy is moral. We often think of mercy as kind of like second or third tier morality, as essentially like cherry on top morality. Right? The meat and potatoes of morality is things like don't lie, cheat, or steal. And if you really want to be kind of fuzzy woo-woo about morality, then add some mercy there on top, too. But you're not going to be graded on it. It's extra credit at best. But according to the measuring line of Jesus, mercy is moral. It's standard. Here's the thing about having a speck of sawdust in your eye. It hurts. I don't care who you are. I don't care how big and strong you are. It hurts. And you need someone to come and help you with it. You need somebody who can see clearly to come and give you a glass of water to flush your eye with. You need someone to help you find a towel to wash off your face with afterwards. If I have a speck of sawdust in my eye, it would only be kind of you, merciful of you, to come and lovingly, gently help me with that speck. A speck of sawdust stands for any kind of small but noticeable and painful moral or failure or character flaw, which all of us have. And all of us are blind to a certain point. We need one another to be able to see them clearly. We need one another to have enough mercy on us that we will gently and lovingly point them out and help us to remove them. There's a world of difference between, dear silly brother, you've got something in your eye again, let me take it out for you, and I am my brother's keeper, and my brother is my keeper too. According to the way of Jesus, mercy is moral, and forgiveness is normal. Think about forgiveness for a moment. If God himself prioritizes forgiveness so greatly that he has stepped down off of the bench and taken our place in the sentence that he handed us, how can we look down on anybody else? Where is the justification for not forgiving others at that point if God has so forgiven us? Where is the logic in that? Where is the fairness in that? Where is the equality in that? How can we hold a grudge against somebody else? How can we not even want forgiveness with another person? If God so loved the world that he gave his only son, how can we be withholding a forgiveness from others if God has not been withholding with us? Mercy is moral, forgiveness is normal, and redemption is at the heart of Jesus' kingdom. Redemption is at the heart of his new yardstick for humanity. So to redeem something is to buy it back, to repurpose it. The mercy and the forgiveness that God shows us buys us back from our old way of life, our way of judgment and naivete, and it repurposes us for a new way of life, a new way of mercy and forgiveness. The last couple weeks, Zach has been talking a little bit about mindfulness. And I think that concept fits well into this passage, too, as a way of practicing this, as a way of living into this. God has brought us out of our old way of judgment and naivete. And he's repurposed us for the way of Jesus. But that's really hard. And it takes a lot of work. I forget if it was either Dallas Willard or Richard Foster who said that God's grace stands in opposition to earning, not to effort. There is no one easy life hack to get us there, to skip all of the difficulty of forgiving over and over again, of being merciful when it's hard. So to apply the idea of mindfulness to this, learn to become mindful. Learn to become aware of when you're judging others, of when you're looking down on others. Learn to notice the times when you look down on them, when you hold other people in contempt. Learn to notice when you're judging people by your own rule or yardstick rather than by Jesus' life and teaching and character. And as you become mindful of that, practice seeing them and yourself through the lens of redemption. What would it look like for them to go from speck in the eye to no more speck in the eye? What would it look like for them if that speck was removed? What would it look like if they were brought out of that old way of living and repurposed for a new and better and more Jesus-like way of living? Pray for that redemption to happen for them. Pray earnestly. And take a look at what logs might be in your own eye. Take a look at what logs might be distorting your own vision of them. Pray for God to redeem you out of that too, and to repurpose you out of that too, and then be brave and have a hard conversation. And along the way, if you noticed that, lo and behold, this person is actually violently antagonistic to the things of God and the way of Jesus, then be wise and discerning. Pray for them and keep on praying for them to be redeemed out of that empty way of living. God is in the habit of softening people's hearts. God is in the habit of turning people around. Pray and keep on praying for them. And if you see them soften, be brave and go have a hard conversation. Or perhaps as you're becoming more and more mindful of your own judgmentalism or of your own naivete, you're becoming discouraged. If that's you, remember that God's mercy and forgiveness and redemption are for you too. They're for you too. Mercy is moral. Forgiveness is normal. And redemption lies at the heart of Jesus' way of being human. When we see him clearly, everything else comes into focus. Let's pray. God, you are merciful and gracious. Lord, you are loving and forgiving, far more so than we even realize half the time. God, come and pour out mercy and grace on us, Lord. Fill us up with the love and the forgiveness that you have. Turn us around, Lord. Repurpose us for the ways of your kingdom. God, for those of us who are feeling that we are not measuring up to your yardstick, God, remind us of your mercy and grace, Lord. Remind us of the power of your Spirit, Lord, that when we are weak, you are strong. Lord, that you are the one who lifts our heads. God, we look to you, we love you, and we rely on you. We pray all of this in your name, Jesus. Amen.